human tool of willpower to control her anger. Woof, who has been told not to chase the paperboy, is overcome by his instincts. Willpower is the power to act. It says that we have the power to choose to control our emotions and to overcome our habits and instincts. As you can see in this example, we either use or fail to use our four human tools every day of our lives. The more we use them, the stronger they become and the more power we have to be proactive. However, if we fail to use them, we tend to react by instinct, like a dog, and not act by choice, like a human. Human tools in action. Dermell Reed once told me how his proactive response to a family crisis changed his life forever. Dermell was raised in one of East Oakland's roughest neighborhoods, the fourth in a family of seven kids. No one in the Reed family had ever graduated from high school before, and Dermell was not about to be the first. Dermell was unsure about his future. His family was struggling. His street was filled with gangs and drug dealers. Could he ever get out? While in his house on a still summer night before his senior year, Dermell heard a series of gunshots. "It's an everyday thing to hear gunshots, and I didn't pay it no mind," said Dermell. Suddenly, one of his friends, who'd been shot in the leg, burst through the door and began hollering that Dermell's little brother, Kevin, had just been shot and killed in a drive-by shooting. "I was upset, and I was angry, and I was hurt, and I lost somebody I ain't never going to see again in my life," Dermell told me. He was only 13 years old, and he was shot over a petty little street scuffle. I can't explain how life went after that. It was just straight downhill for the whole family. Dermell's natural reaction was to kill the murderer. After all, Dermell was raised in the streets, and that was the only real way he could pay back his dead brother. The police were still trying to figure out who did it, but Dermell knew. On a muggy August night, a few weeks after Kevin's death, Dermell got a hold of a .38 caliber revolver and went out in the streets to get revenge on Tony Fat Tone Davis, the crack dealer who had killed his brother. "It was dark," said Dermell. "Davis and his friends couldn't see me. There he was sitting, talking, laughing, having fun, and here I am within 50 feet of him, crouched behind a car with a loaded gun. I was sitting there thinking, I could just pull this little trigger and kill the guy who killed my brother. Big decision." At this point, Dermell pushed pause and caught hold of himself. Using his imagination, he thought about his past and his future. "I thought about my life in a matter of seconds," he said. "I weighed my options. I weighed the chances of me escaping, not getting caught, the police trying to figure out who it was. I thought about the times Kevin would come watch me play football. He always told me I was going to be a pro football player. I thought about my future, about going to college, about what I wanted to make of my life." Pausing, Dermell listened to his conscience. He said, "I'm holding a gun, I'm shaking, and I think the good side of me told me to get up and go home and go to school. If I took revenge, I'd be throwing away my future. I'd be no better than the guy who shot my brother." Using raw willpower, Dermell, instead of giving in to his anger and throwing away his life, got up, walked home, and vowed that he would finish college for his dead brother. 9 months later, Reed had made the honor roll and was graduating from high school. People in his school couldn't believe it. 5 years later, Reed had become a college football star and a college graduate. Like Dermell, each of us will face an extraordinary challenge or two along the way, and we can choose whether or not to rise above those challenges or to be conquered by them. Elaine Maxwell sums up the entire matter quite well. "Whether I fail or succeed shall be no man's doing but my own. I am the force. I can clear any obstacle before me, or I can be lost in the maze. My choice, my responsibility, win or lose, only I hold the key to my destiny." It's kind of like the old Volkswagen commercials that say, "On the road of life, there are passengers and there are drivers. Drivers wanted." So, let me ask you, are you in the driver's seat of your life, or are you merely a passenger? Are you conducting your symphony, or simply being played? Are you acting like a can of soda pop or a bottle of water? After all that's been said and done, the choice is yours. Coming attractions. In the chapter that follows, I'll take you on a ride you'll never forget called The Great Discovery. Come along, it's a thrill a minute.
Baby steps, number one. The next time someone flips you off, give them the peace sign back.
2. Listen carefully to your words today. Count how many times you use reactive language, such as, you make me, I have to, why can't they, and I can't.
3. Do something today that you have wanted to do but never dared. Leave your comfort zone and go for it. Ask someone out on a date, raise your hand in class, or join a team.
4. Write yourself a post-it note. I will not let. Place it in your locker, on your mirror, or in your planner, and refer to it often.
5. At the next party, don't just sit against the wall and wait for excitement to find you. You find it. Walk up and introduce yourself to someone new.
6. The next time you receive a grade that you think is unfair, don't blow it off or cry about it. Make an appointment with the teacher to discuss it and see what you can learn.
7. If you get in a fight with a parent or friend, be the first to apologize.
8. Identify something in your circle of no control that you are always worried about. Decide now to drop it.
9. Push the pause button before you react to someone who bumps into you in the hall, calls your name, or cuts in line.
10. Use your tool of self-awareness right now by asking yourself, what is my most unhealthy habit? Make up your mind to do something about it.
2. Begin with the end in mind. Control your own destiny, or someone else will. Here's a great quote from Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. Would you tell me, please, which way I ought to walk from here? That depends a good deal on where you want to get to, said the cat. I don't much care where, said Alice. Then it doesn't matter which way to walk, said the cat. You've just been asked to put together a jigsaw puzzle. Having done many such puzzles before, you're excited to get started. You pour out all 1,000 pieces, spreading them across a large table. You then pick up the lid to the box to look at what you're putting together. But there's no picture. It's blank. How will you ever be able to finish the puzzle without knowing what it looks like, you wonder? If you had only a 1-second glimpse of what it's supposed to be, that's all you'd need. What a difference it would make. Without it, you don't have a clue where to even start. Now, think about your own life and your 1,000 pieces. Do you have an end in mind? Do you have a clear picture of who you want to be 1 year from now, 5 years from now, or are you clueless? 2, begin with the end in mind, means developing a clear picture of where you want to go with your life. It means deciding what your values are and setting goals. 1 says, you are the driver of your life, not the passenger. 2 says, since you're the driver, decide where you want to go and draw up a map to get there. Now, just wait a minute, Sean, you might be thinking. I don't know what my end in mind is. I don't even know what I want to be when I grow up. If it makes you feel any better, I'm grown up and I'm still not sure what I want to be. By saying begin with the end in mind, I'm not talking about deciding every little detail of your future, like choosing your career or deciding whom you'll marry. I'm simply talking about thinking beyond today and deciding what direction you want to take with your life, so that each step you take is always in the right direction. Begin with the end in mind, what it means. You may not realize it, but you do it all the time. Beginning with the end in mind, that is. You draw up a blueprint before you build a house. You read a recipe before you bake a cake. You create an outline before you write a paper. At least I hope you do. It's part of life. Let's have a begin with the end in mind experience right now, using your tool of imagination. Find a place where you can be alone without interruption. There. Now, clear your mind of everything. Don't worry about school, your friends, your family, or that zit on your forehead. Just focus with me, breathe deeply, and open your mind. In your mind's eye, visualize someone walking toward you about half a block away. At first, you can't see who it is. As this person gets closer and closer, you suddenly realize, believe it or not, that it's you. But it's not you today, it's you as you would like to be 1 year from now. Now, think deeply. What have you done with your life over the past year? How do you feel inside? What do you look like? What characteristics do you possess? Remember, this is you as you would like to be 1 year from now. You can float back to reality now. If you were a good sport and actually tried this experiment, you probably got in touch with your deeper self. You got a feel for what's important to you and what you'd like to accomplish this next year. That's called beginning with the end in mind. And it doesn't even hurt. As Jim discovered, Beginning with the end in mind is a powerful way to help you turn your dreams into realities.
When I feel frustrated or get depressed, I have found something that really helps me. I go someplace where I can be alone. I close my eyes and I visualize mentally where I want to be and where I want to go when I am an adult. I try to see the whole picture of my dream life, and then I automatically begin to think about what it's going to take to get there and what I need to change. This technique started when I was a ninth grader, and today I am on my way to making some of those visualizations become a reality.
In fact, thinking beyond today can really be quite exciting and, as this high school senior attests, can help you take charge of your life.
I've never planned a thing in my life. I just do things as they pop up. The thought that one should have an end in mind never, ever crossed my mind. It has been so exciting to learn, because suddenly I find myself thinking beyond the now. I am now not only planning my education, but also thinking about how I want to raise my kids, how I want to teach my family, and what kind of home life we should have. I'm taking charge of me, and not blowing in the wind anymore.
Why is it so important to have an end in mind? I'll give you two good reasons. The first is that you are at a critical crossroads in life, and the paths you choose now can affect you forever. The second is that if you don't decide your own future, someone else will do it for you. The crossroads of life. Let's take a look at the first important reason. So, here you are. You're young, you're free, you have your whole life before you. You're standing at the crossroads of life, and you have to choose which paths to take. Do you want to go to college or graduate school? What will your attitude towards life be? Should you try out for that team? What type of friends do you want to have? Will you join a gang? Who will you date? Will you have sex before marriage? Will you drink, smoke, or do drugs? What values will you choose? What kind of relationships do you want to have with your family? What will you stand for? How will you contribute to your community? The paths you choose today can shape you forever. It's both frightening and exciting that we have to make so many vital decisions when we're so young and full of hormones, but such is life. Imagine an 80-foot rope stretched out before you. Each foot represents 1 year of your life. Teenagehood is only 7 years, such a short span of rope, but those seven affect the remaining 61, for good or bad, in such a powerful way. What about friends? Take your choice of friends as an example. What a powerful influence they can have on your attitude, reputation, and direction. The need to be accepted and be part of a group is so powerful, but too often we choose our friends based on whoever will accept us, and that's not always good. For example, to be accepted by the kids who do drugs, all you have to do is do drugs yourself. It's hard, but sometimes it is better to have no friends for a time than to have the wrong friends. The wrong group can lead you down all kinds of paths you really don't want to be on, and retracting your steps can be a long and hard journey. I have a close friend who, fortunately, had enough common sense to drop his old friends for some new ones, and he shared the following.
The summer before my senior year, I had a really good friend named Jack. The month before school started, he went to Europe and, to my surprise, came back with a powerful drug called hashish. Neither of us had ever experimented with drugs before. He began to invite me to join him in using this drug with a group of his new friends. He also started the 24 Club, where you would sit in a circle and drink 24 tall bottles of beer, one after another, until they were gone. I knew that there was no future in any of it, and that eventually he would self-destruct if he continued using these drugs. However, he had been my best friend since grade school, and I didn't have a lot of other close friends. I didn't want to be a loner, but I also didn't want to end up where I thought Jack was going. I remember finally deciding, sadly, that it was just too risky to hang out with him anymore. And so my senior year, I had to start over making friends. At first, I felt awkward, didn't fit in, and felt dumb being alone. But after a few months, I made some friends with guys who had similar values and were also a lot of fun. My old friend Jack turned into a druggie, barely graduated, and eventually drowned in a swimming pool while intoxicated. It was very sad, but I was grateful I had the guts to stick with the right decision and think long-term at a crucial time in my life.
If you're having trouble making good friends, remember that your friends don't always have to be your age. I once spoke to a guy who seemed to have very few friends at school, but he did have a grandpa who listened to him and was a great friend. This seemed to fill the friendship void he had in his life. The long and short of it is, just be wise when choosing friends, because much of your future hangs on who you hang out with. And what about sex? Talk about an important decision with huge consequences. If you wait until the heat of the moment to choose which path to take, it's too late. Your decision has already been made. You need to decide now. The path you choose will affect your health, your self-image, how fast you grow up, your reputation, whom you marry, your future children, and so much more. Think this decision through carefully. One way to do this is to imagine how you hope to feel on your wedding day. How do you hope your future mate is leading his or her life right now? In a recent poll, going to movies was ranked as the favorite pastime of teens. I love movies, so I'm right there with you, but I'd be very careful about the values they promote. The movies lie, especially when it comes to issues like sex. They glamorize sleeping around and having one-night stands without acknowledging the potential risks and consequences. The movies don't show you the life-altering reality of contracting a disease like AIDS or STDs, or becoming pregnant and having to deal with everything that brings with it. They don't tell you what it's like living on minimum wage because you had to drop out of high school and the father of the child is long gone and sends no money, or what it's like spending your weekends changing diapers and caring for a baby instead of cheering on your volleyball team, going to dances, and just being a kid. We are free to choose our paths, but we can't choose the consequences that come with them. Have you ever gone water sliding? You can choose which slide you want to go down, but once you're sliding, you can't very well stop. You must live with the consequences to the end. A teenage girl from Illinois shared this story.
I had one bad year, my freshman year, when I did everything from drinking, drugs, older guys, bad crowds, etc., mostly because I was frustrated and unhappy. It just lasted a year, but I am still paying for those past mistakes. No one forgets, and it's hard to have to deal with the past you aren't too proud of. I feel as though it will haunt me forever. All kinds of people still come up to my boyfriend and say, "I hear your girlfriend drinks and smokes and is easy," and things like that. But the worst is probably the fact that every time I have a problem of any kind, I immediately think, maybe if I hadn't done that, everything would be okay.
What about school? What you do about your schooling can also shape your future in a major way. Krista's experience goes to show how beginning with the end in mind in your educational pursuits pays off.
As a junior in high school, I decided to take an advanced placement U.S. history class. At the end of the school year, I would then have a chance to take a national exam to qualify for college credit. Throughout the school year, the instructor bombarded us with homework. It was difficult to keep up, but I was determined to do well in the class as well as pass the national exam. With this end in mind, it was easy to put forth my full effort on each assignment. One assignment was particularly time-consuming. The instructor asked each student to watch a documentary on the Civil War and write a paper on each segment. The series lasted 10 days, and each segment was 2 hours long. As an active high school student, it was difficult to find the time, but I did. I submitted the report and discovered I was one of only a handful of students who watched the series. The day of the exam finally arrived. The students were nervous, and the air was thick. The test administrator announced, "Begin." I took a deep breath and broke the seal on the first section, multiple choice. With each question, I gained confidence. I knew the answers. I completed the section several minutes before I heard, "Pencils down." Next, we would each write an essay. I nervously opened the seal of the essay book and scanned the questions quickly. I answered a question related to the Civil War using references from my reading as well as a documentary. I felt calm and confident as I completed the exam. Several weeks later, I received my score in the mail. I had passed.
Who's in the lead? The other reason to create a vision is that if you don't, someone else will do it for you. As Jack Welch, former teen and current business executive, put it, control your own destiny or someone else will. Who will, you may ask? Perhaps your friends or parents or the media. Do you want your friends to tell you what you stand for? You may have fine parents, but do you want them to drop the blueprint for your own life? Their interests may be far different from yours. Do you want to adopt the values portrayed in soap operas, magazines, and on the big screen? By now you might be thinking, but I don't like to think about the future so much. I like to live in the moment and go with the flow. I agree with the live in the moment part. We ought to enjoy the moment and not have our heads too far in the clouds. But I disagree with the go with the flow part. If you decide to just go with the flow, you'll end up where the flow usually goes, which is downhill, often leading to a big pile of sludge and a life of unhappiness. You'll end up doing what everyone else is doing, which may not be your end in mind at all. The road to anywhere is really a life to nowhere. Without an end in mind of our own, we are often so quick to follow anyone who is willing to take the lead, even into things that won't get us far. It reminds me of an experience I once had at a 10K road race. Some other runners and I were waiting for the race to start, but no one knew where the starting line was. Then a few runners began walking down the road as if they knew. Everyone, including me, began following. We just assumed they knew where they were going. After walking for about a mile, we all suddenly realized that, like a herd of dumb sheep, we were following some doughhead who had no idea where he was going. It turned out that the starting line was back right where we had begun. Never assume that the herd must know where they are going, because they usually don't. A personal mission statement. So, if it is so important to have an end in mind, how do you do it? The best way I have found is to write a personal mission statement. A personal mission statement is like a personal credo or motto that states what your life is about. It is like the blueprint to your life. Countries have constitutions which function just like a mission statement. And most companies like Microsoft and Coca-Cola also have mission statements. But I think they even work better for people. So, why not write your own personal mission statement? Many teens have. As you'll see, they come in all types and varieties. Some are long and some are short. Some are poems and some are songs. Some teens have used their favorite quote as their mission statement. Others have used a picture or a photograph. Let me share a few teenage mission statements with you. This first one was contributed by a teen named Beth Hare.
First and foremost, I will remain faithful always to my God. I will not underestimate the power of my family unity. I will not neglect a true friend, but I will set aside time for myself as well. I will cross my bridges as I come to them, divide and conquer. I will begin all challenges with optimism, rather than doubt. I will always maintain a positive self-image and high self-esteem, knowing that all my intentions begin with self-evaluation.
Mary Beth Sylvester took her mission statement from the Sinead O'Connor song, Emperor's New Clothes. It reads, I will live by my own policies. I will sleep with a clear conscience. I will sleep in peace. I met a teen named Adam Sosny from North Carolina who was familiar with the Seven Habits and was on fire about his future plans. Not surprisingly, he had a mission statement, which he volunteered.
Have confidence in yourself and everyone else around you. Be kind, courteous, and respectful to all people. Set reachable goals. Never lose sight of these goals. Never take the simple things in life for granted. Appreciate other people's differences and see their differences as a great advantage. Ask questions. Strive each day to reach interdependence. Remember that before you can change someone else, you must first change yourself. Speak with your actions, not with your words. Make the time to help those less fortunate than yourself or those who are having a bad day. Read the Seven Habits every day. Read this mission statement every day.
So, what can writing a mission statement do for you? Tons. The most important thing it will do is open your eyes to what's really important to you and help you make decisions accordingly. A 12th grader shared how writing a mission statement made such a difference in her life.
During my junior year, I couldn't concentrate on anything because I had a boyfriend. I wanted to do everything for him and make him happy. And then, naturally, the subject of sex came up, and I wasn't at all prepared for it. And it became a nagging, constant thing on my mind. I felt like I wasn't ready and that I didn't want to have sex, but everyone else kept saying, just do it. Then I participated in a character development class at school where they taught me to write a mission statement. I started to write and kept on writing and writing and kept adding things to it. It gave me direction and a focus, and I felt like I had a plan and a reason for doing what I was doing. It really helped me to stick to my standards and not do something I wasn't ready for.
A personal mission statement is like a tree with deep roots. It is stable and isn't going anywhere, but it is also alive and continually growing. You need a tree with deep roots to help you survive all of the storms of life that beat you up. As you've probably noticed already, life is anything but stable. Think about it. People are fickle. Your boyfriend loves you one minute and then dumps you the next. You're someone's best friend one day, and then they're talking behind your back the next. Think about all the events you can't control. You have to move. You lose your job. The country is at war. Your parents are getting divorced. Fads come and go. Sweaters are popular one year and on their way out the next. Rap music is a thing. Rap music stinks. While everything about you changes, a personal mission statement can be your deep-rooted tree that never moves. You can deal with change if you have an immovable trunk to hang on to. Uncovering your talents. An important part of developing a personal mission statement is discovering what you're good at. One thing I know for sure is that everyone has a talent, a gift, something they do well. Some talents, like having the singing voice of an angel, attract a lot of attention. But there are many other talents, maybe not as attention-grabbing, but every bit as important, if not more. Things like being skilled at listening, making people laugh, giving, forgiving, drawing, or just being nice. Another truth is that we all blossom at different times. So if you're a late bloomer, relax. It may take you a while to uncover your talents. After carving a beautiful sculpture, Michelangelo was asked how he was able to do it. He replied by saying that the sculpture was already in the block of granite from the very beginning. He just had to chisel off everything else around it. Likewise, Viktor Frankl, a famous Jewish Austrian psychiatrist who survived the death camps of Nazi Germany, taught that we don't invent our talents in life, but rather we detect them. In other words, you are already born with your talents. You just need to uncover them. I'll never forget my experience with finding a talent I never thought I had. To fulfill Mr. Williams' creative writing assignment for freshman English, I turned in my first high school paper entitled The Old Man and the Fish. It was the same story my father had often told me at night while I was growing up. I just assumed he had made it up. He didn't bother telling me he had stolen the plot directly from Ernest Hemingway's award-winning novel, The Old Man and the Sea. I was shocked when my paper was returned with the remarks, "Sounds a bit trite, like Hemingway's Old Man and the Sea." "Who's this guy Hemingway?" I thought, "and how come he copied my dad?" That was my poor start to 4 years of rather boring high school English classes, which were about as exciting to me as a clump of dirt. It wasn't until college when I took a short story class from a remarkable professor that I began to detect my passion for writing. If you can believe it, I even majored in English. Mr. Williams would have died. The Great Discovery. The Great Discovery is a fun activity designed to help you get in touch with your deeper self as you prepare to write a mission statement. As you walk through it, answer the questions honestly. You can write your answers down on a piece of paper if you'd like. If you don't feel like writing your answers down, just think them through. When you're finished, I think you'll have a much better idea of what inspires you, what you enjoy doing, whom you admire, and where you want to take your life. So, here we go. First question. Think of a person who has made a positive difference in your life. What qualities does that person have that you would like to develop? Question 2. Imagine 20 years from now, you are surrounded by the most important people in your life. Who are they and what are you doing? Question 3. If a steel beam 6 inches wide were placed across 2 skyscrapers, for what would you be willing to cross? $1,000? $1,000,000? Your pet? Your brother? Fame? Think carefully. Question number 4. If you could spend one day in a great library studying anything you wanted, what would you study? Question 5. List 10 things you love to do. It could be singing, dancing, looking at magazines, drawing, reading, daydreaming, anything you absolutely love to do. Number 6. Describe a time when you were deeply inspired. Question 7. 5 years from now, your local paper does a story about you and they want to interview 3 people, a parent, a brother or sister, and a friend. What would you want them to say about you? Number 8. Think of something that represents you, a rose, a song, an animal. Why does it represent you? Question 9. If you could spend an hour with any person who ever lived, who would that be? Why that person? What would you ask them? And finally, question 10. Everyone has one or more talents. Which ones are you best at? Here are some options. You're good with numbers, good with words, creative thinking, athletics, making things happen, sensing needs, mechanical, artistic, working well with people, memorizing things, decision-making, building things, accepting others, predicting what will happen, trivia, music, sharing, humor, singing, listening, dancing, writing, or speaking. Which talents do you have? Or think of ones I haven't mentioned. Getting started on your mission statement. Now that you've taken the time to walk through the Great Discovery, you've got a good jump start on developing a mission statement. Below, I've listed 4 easy methods to help you get started writing your own mission statement. You may want to try one of them or combine all 4 of them in any way you see fit. These are just suggestions, so feel free to find your own method. Method number 1, the quote collection. Collect 1 to 5 of your very favorite quotes onto 1 sheet of paper. The sum of these quotes then becomes your mission statement. For some, great quotes are very inspiring, and this method works well for them. Method number 2, the brain dump. Speed write about your mission for 15 minutes. Don't worry about what's coming out. Don't edit what you're writing. Just keep writing and don't stop writing. Get all of your ideas down on paper. If you get stuck, reflect upon your answers to the Great Discovery. That should get your imagination in gear. When your brain has been sufficiently purged, take another 15 minutes to edit, arrange, and make sense of your brain dump. The result is that in just 30 minutes, you'll have a rough draft of your mission statement. Then, over the next several weeks, you can revise it, add to it, clarify it, or do whatever else you need to make it inspire you. Method number 3, the retreat. Plan a large chunk of time, like an entire afternoon, and go to a place you adore and where you can be alone. Think deeply about your life and what you want to make of it. Review your answers to the Great Discovery. Look to the mission statement examples in this book for ideas. Take your time and construct your own mission statement using any method you see fit. Method number 4, the big lazy. If you're really lazy, use the U.S. Army's slogan, "Be all that you can be," as your personal mission statement. Hey, I'm only joking. A big mistake teens make when writing a mission statement is that they spend so much time thinking about making it perfect, they never get started. You're much better off writing an imperfect rough draft and then improving it later. Another big mistake is that teens try to make their mission statements look like everyone else's. That doesn't work. Mission statements come in many forms: a poem, a song, a quote, a picture, many words, a single word, or a collage of magazine pictures. There's no single right way to do it. You're not writing it for anyone else but you. You're not writing it for your English teacher, and it's not going to be graded by anyone. It's your secret document, so make it sing. The most important question to ask yourself is, does it inspire me? If you can answer yes, you did it right. Once you have it written, put it in a place where you can easily access it, like inside your journal or on your mirror. Or you could reduce it, laminate it, and put it in your purse or wallet. Then, refer to it often, or even better, memorize it. Here are 2 more examples of teen mission statements, each very different in style and length. Whitney Nosiska's mission statement.
Care. About the world, about life, about people, about myself. Love. Myself, my family, my world. Knowledge, learning, life. Fight. For my beliefs, for my passions, to accomplish, to do good, to be true to myself, against apathy. Rock the boat. Don't let the boat rock me. Be a rock.
This one was written by Katie Hall. It is short, but to her it means everything.
Nothing less.
As you strive to begin with the end in mind and develop a personal mission statement, watch out for dangerous roadblocks. Watch out number 1, negative labels. Have you ever felt labeled by others in a negative way, by your family, your teachers, or friends? You guys from the East Side are all the same, always getting into trouble. You're the laziest kid I know. Why don't you get off your butt and do something for a change? There goes Susie. I hear she's a total sleaze. I'm sure your school has its own labels. In my school, we had the cowboys, the brains, the airheads, the pretty boys, the partiers, the preps, the babes, the burnouts, the jocks, the D-wingers, and many other groups. I was labeled in the jock category. The term jock meant that you played sports, were stuck on yourself, and had a brain the size of a peanut. Labels are an ugly form of prejudice. Break down the word prejudice, and what do you get? Ta-da! Prejudge. Isn't that interesting? When you label someone, you are prejudging them. That means making conclusions about someone without knowing them. I don't know about you, but I can't stand it when I'm unfairly judged by someone who doesn't know a thing about me. You and I are much too complex to be neatly shelved into a category, like clothing in a department store. As if there were only a handful of different types of people in the world instead of millions of unique individuals. If you've been falsely labeled, you can live with it. The real danger comes when you start to believe the labels yourself, because labels are just like paradigms. What you see is what you get. For instance, if you've been labeled as being lazy and you begin to believe it yourself, it will become a self-fulfilling belief. You'll act out the label. Just remember, you are not your labels. Watch out number two, it's all over syndrome. Another thing to watch out for is when you've made a mistake or three and feel so bad about what you've done that you say to yourself, it's all over, I've blown it, who cares what happens now? At this point, you'll often begin to self-destruct and let it all hang out. Let me just say this, it's never over. It seems that many teens go through a time when they lose it and experiment and do a whole bunch of things they aren't proud of. Almost as if they were testing the boundaries of life. If you've made mistakes, you're normal. Every teen has. Every adult has. Just get your head screwed on straight as quickly as you can, and you'll be okay. Watch out number three. Wrong wall. Have you ever worked really hard to get something you wanted, only to find that when you got it, you felt empty inside? So often, in our quest to be more popular and to be part of the in-group, we lose sight of things that are far more important, like self-respect, true friendships, and peace of mind. We are often so busy climbing the ladder of success that we never take time to see if our ladder is leaning against the right wall. Having no end in mind is a problem, but having an end in mind that leads us in the wrong direction can be an even bigger problem. I once played football with a guy who was an incredible player. He had everything going for him, including being the team captain and having the ultimate buffed body. Each game, he would excite fans with heroic efforts and spectacular athletic feats. Fans praised his name, and young boys worshipped him, and even the women adored him. He had it all, or so it appeared. You see, even though he was shining on the field, he wasn't doing right off the field, and he knew it, and so did I, because I had grown up with him. As his fame increased, I watched him turn away from the principles that he grew up with and lose his direction. He gained the high fives of the crowd, but compromised something else far more meaningful, his character. It doesn't really matter how fast you're going or how good you're looking if you're headed in the wrong direction. How can you tell if your ladder is leaning against the right wall? Stop. Take a moment right now and ask yourself, is the life I'm living leading me in the right direction? Be brutally honest and pause as you listen to your conscience, that inner voice. What is it telling you? Our lives don't always require 180-degree shifts in direction. More often, we only need small shifts, but small changes can make huge destination differences. Imagine this. If you wanted to fly from New York to Tel Aviv in Israel, but made a 1-degree change north, you would end up in Moscow instead of Tel Aviv. Go for the goal. Once you have your mission in place, you'll want to set goals. Goals are more specific than a mission statement and can help you break down your mission into bite-sized pieces. If your personal mission statement was to eat a whole pizza, your goal would be how to slice it up. Sometimes when we hear the word goals, we go on a guilt trip. It reminds us of all the goals we should have been setting and the ones we have blown. Well, forget about any mistakes you may have made in the past. Instead, follow the advice of George Bernard Shaw, who said, "When I was a young man, I observed that 9 out of 10 things I did were failures. I didn't want to be a failure, so I did 10 times more work." Here are 5 keys to goal setting. Key number 1, count the cost. How many times do we set goals when we are in the mood, but then later find we don't have the strength to follow through? Why does this happen? It's because we haven't counted the cost. Let's pretend you set a goal to get better grades in school this year. Good and fine. But now, before you begin, count the cost. What will it require? For instance, you will have to spend more time doing math and grammar and less time hanging out with your friends. You will have to stay up late some nights. Finding more time for schoolwork might mean giving up watching TV or reading your favorite magazine. Now, having counted the cost, consider the benefits. What could good grades bring you? A feeling of accomplishment? A scholarship to college? A good job? Now ask yourself, am I willing to make the sacrifice? If not, then don't do it. Don't make commitments to yourself you know you're going to break because you'll take withdrawals from your personal bank account. A better way is to make the goal more bite-sized. Instead of setting a goal to get better grades in all your classes, you might set a goal to get better grades in just 2 classes. Then next semester, take another bite. Counting the cost will always add a touch of needed realism to your goals. Key number 2, put it in pen. It's been said, a goal not written is only a wish. There are no ifs and buts about it. A written goal carries 10 times the power. A young woman named Tammy told me about how writing down her goals helped her eventually choose the right marriage partner. Tammy had been in an emotionally abusive relationship with a guy named Tom for many years and felt trapped. She had become dependent on him and was miserable. A visit from a special friend one day finally gave her the inner spark she needed to make a change. This is an excerpt from Tammy's journal when she was 18.
Just yesterday, I found enough strength and strong will to leave Tom and the environment I was a part of for the past 2.5 years. I needed to make a 180-degree change in order to find inner strength enough to succeed. I drew up a mental picture of where I wanted to be in 5 years and how I wanted to feel. I had a vision of being my own person, of having the strength to make good decisions for my life, and most of all, being with someone in a good, healthy relationship. I came up with a list of qualities I wanted in a relationship, and I think I will write them down now for future reference. Qualities for a relationship future spouse. 1. Respect. 2. Unconditional love. 3. Honesty. 4. Loyalty. 5. Will support me in my pursuits and goals in life. 6. Righteous. 7. Fun and good sense of humor. 8. Makes me laugh every day. 9. Will make me feel whole, not torn apart. 10. Good father and good with children. 11. Good listener. 12. Will make time for me and will want the best for me in my life. Now that I have this list documented, I have some place to turn to get a glimpse of what the future can hold. It gives me hope when I read it, and it reminds me of a better way to live life.
Tammy later met and married a great guy who fulfilled her requirements. Happy endings do happen. As Tammy discovered, there is something magical about writing down your goals. Writing forces you to be specific, which is very important in goal setting. As actress Lily Tomlin has said, "I always wanted to be somebody, but I should have been more specific." Key number 3, just do it. I once read a story about Cortez and his expedition to Mexico. With over 500 men and 11 ships, Cortez sailed from Cuba to the coast of Yucatan in 1519. On the mainland, he did something no other expedition leader had thought of. He burned his ships. By cutting off all means of retreat, Cortez committed his entire force and himself to the cause. It was conquest or bust. To everything there is a season, says the Bible, a time to say, I'll try, and a time to say, I will, a time to make excuses and a time to burn your ships. Of course, there are times when trying our best is all we can do. But I also believe there is a time for doing. Would you lend $2,000 to a business partner who said, I'll try to return it? Would you get married if your partner, when asked to take you as the lawfully wedded husband or wife, said, I'll try? You get my point? I once heard a story about a captain and a lieutenant. Lieutenant, would you please deliver this letter for me? I'll do my best, sir. No, I don't want you to do your best. I want you to deliver this letter. I'll do it or I'll die, sir. You misunderstand, Lieutenant. I don't want you to die. I just want you to deliver this letter. Finally, the lieutenant caught on and said, I will do it, sir. Once we are fully committed to doing a task, our power to complete it will increase. If you do the thing, said Ralph Waldo Emerson, you will have the power. Each time I have committed myself to a goal, I seem to dig up gold mines of willpower, skill, and creativity I never thought I possessed. Those who are committed always find a way. The following passage by W.H. Murray is one of my all-time favorites. It describes what happens inside when we say, I will. Here's what he said. Until one is committed, there is hesitancy, the chance to draw back, always ineffectiveness. There is one elementary truth, the ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid plans, that the moment one definitely commits oneself, then providence moves too. All sorts of things begin to occur which would never otherwise have occurred, and a whole stream of events issues from the decision, raising in one's favor all manner of unforeseen incidents and material assistance which no man could have dreamt would have come his way. I have learned a deep respect for one of Goethe's couplets. Whatever you can do, or dream you can, begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it. In the words of Yoda, the great Jedi master, do or do not. There is no try. Key number 4. Use momentous moments. Certain moments in life contain momentum and power. The key is to harness these moments for goal setting. Things with starts and finishes, or beginnings and ends, carry momentum. For example, a new year represents a start. Breaking up, on the other hand, represents an end. I remember how sick I felt after breaking up with my girlfriend after dating her for 2 years. But I also remember the excitement of creating a new list of girls to date. The following is a list of moments that can provide momentum for you as you set out to make new goals. A new school year. A life-changing experience, breaking up, a new job, a new relationship, a second chance, birth, death, an anniversary, a triumph, a setback, moving to a new city, a new season, graduation, marriage, divorce, a new home, a promotion, a demotion, a new look, or a new day. Often, tough experiences can carry momentum. Are you familiar with the myth of the phoenix bird? After every lifespan of 500 to 600 years, the beautiful phoenix would burn itself at the stake. Out of the ashes, it would later arise, reborn. In like manner, we can regenerate ourselves out of the ashes of a bad experience. Setbacks and tragedies can often serve as a springboard for change. Learn to harness the power of key moments, to set goals and make commitments when you are in the mood to do it. Be assured as well that the mood to do it will pass. Sticking with it when you don't feel like it is the true test of your character. As someone once put it, character is the discipline to follow through with resolutions long after the spirit in which they were made has passed. Key number 5, rope up. My brother-in-law, the mountain climber, once escorted me and a friend up the 13,776-foot Grand Teton in Wyoming. It was terrifying. As we ascended, the mountain turned vertical. At that point, we roped up or tied ourselves together with ropes to aid us in climbing and to save our lives if one of us fell. On 2 occasions, that rope kept me from taking 1,000-foot falls to my death. Believe me, I love that rope as I've never loved a rope before. By assisting each other and relying on the ropes, we finally reached the summit safely. You'll accomplish much more in life if you'll rope up and borrow strength from others. Let's suppose you set a goal to get into great shape. Now think. How could you rope up? Well, maybe you could find a friend who has made the same goal and the two of you could work out together and become each other's cheerleaders. Or maybe you could tell your parents about your goal and get their buy-in. Or maybe you could share your goal with an athletic trainer or your gym coach and ask him or her for advice. Get creative. Rope up with friends, brothers, sisters, girlfriends, parents, counselors, grandparents, pastors, or whomever else you can. The more ropes you have out, the greater your chances for success. Goals in action. When I was a sophomore in high school, I weighed 180 pounds. My brother David, just a freshman, weighed a whopping 95 pounds. We were only 1 year apart, yet I was twice his size. But David had a mountain of a spirit and did incredible things to get where he wanted to go. This is his story.
I will never forget when I tried out for the freshman football team at Preble High. At 5'2" and weighing only 90 pounds, I was even smaller than the stereotypical 98-pound weakling. I couldn't find any football equipment to fit me. It was all too big. I was issued the smallest helmet they had, but still had to tape 3 ear pads together on each side of it to make it fit my head. I looked like a mosquito with a balloon on its head. I used to dread football practice, especially when we had to crack heads with the sophomores. We used to line up facing each other about 10 yards apart with the freshmen on one side and the sophomores on the opposite side. When coach blew the whistle, you were supposed to hit your opponent until the whistle blew again. I used to count the players in my line to see when my turn would come up, and then count the players in the sophomore line to see who would have the privilege of teaching me how to fly. It seemed that I always ended up getting the biggest, meanest sophomores as my opponent. "I'm dead meat," was my constant thought. I would line up, wait for the whistle, and in a moment find myself flying backwards and upwards through the air. That winter, I tried out for the wrestling team. I wrestled in the 98-pound division. Even though I weighed in with all my clothes on after eating a big meal, I still couldn't tip the scales at 98 pounds. In fact, I was the only guy on the team who didn't have to lose weight to wrestle. My brothers thought I would be a good wrestler because, unlike football, wrestling allowed me to compete with guys about my own height. But to make a long story short, I got pinned almost every match. In the spring, I went out for track, but as luck would have it, I was one of the slowest guys on the team. Little wonder, you should have seen my pencil-thin legs. One day after track workouts, I just couldn't stand it anymore. "That's it," I said to myself. "I am sick of this." That night, in the privacy of my room, I wrote down some goals I wanted to achieve during high school. To be successful in my athletics, I knew I had to get bigger and stronger, so I set goals in these areas first. By my senior year, I set a goal to be 6 feet tall, to weigh 180 pounds, and to bench press 250 pounds. In football, I set a goal to be the starting wide receiver on the varsity football team. And in track, I set a goal to be an all-state sprinter. I also envisioned myself being captain on both the football team and the track team. A lot of nice dreams, wouldn't you say? At that moment, however, I was staring reality in the face, all 90 pounds of it, but I stuck with my plan for my freshman until my senior year. Let me illustrate. As part of my weight-gaining process, I made a rule that my stomach would never be empty, so I ate constantly. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner were merely 3 meals in an 8-meal day. I made a secret agreement with Kerry, the starting varsity linebacker for Preble High, who stood 6'3" tall and weighed 235 pounds. He promised me that if I helped him with his Algebra 2 homework, he would allow me to eat lunch with him every day for weight gain and protection purposes. I was determined to eat the same amount he ate, so each day at lunch, I bought 2 lunches, 3 milks, and 4 rolls. We must have been a hilarious sight together. I was also taking my gain weight fast protein powder along with my lunch. I would mix a sickening powder in each of my milks and nearly barf each time I drank it. During my sophomore year, I began working out with my good friend Eddie, who was also yearning to get big. He added another requirement to my food list: 10 full teaspoons of straight peanut butter and 3 glasses of milk each night before bed. Each week, we were required to gain 2 pounds. If we didn't make weight on the official weigh-in day, we were required to eat or drink until we did. My mom read an article that said if a young kid slept 10 hours a night in a completely dark room and drank 2 to 3 extra glasses of milk a day, he could grow 1 to 2 inches more than he normally would. I believed this and followed it rigidly. After all, I needed to reach my goal of 6 feet, and my dad's height of 5'10" wasn't going to help me. "Dad," I said, "I want the darkest room in the house." I got it. Then I put towels under the door crack and over the window. No light was going to shine on me. Next, I set a sleeping timetable. I went to bed around 8:45 p.m. and got up around 7:15 a.m. This ensured me 10.5 hours of sleep. Finally, I drank all the milk I could. I also began lifting weights, running, and catching the football. Each day, I would work out at least 2 hours. When Eddie and I lifted at the weight room, we would check out the XL shirts in hopes that one day we would fill them. At first, I could only bench press 75 pounds, slightly more than the bar. As the months passed, I began to see results. Small results, slow results, but results. By the time I was a sophomore, I was 5'5" and about 120 pounds. I had grown 3 inches and gained 30 pounds, and I was much stronger. Some days I felt like a lone man against the whole world. I especially hated it when people would ask me, "How come you're so skinny? why don't you just eat more? I felt like saying back, you idiot, do you have any idea of the price I've been paying? By my junior year, I was 5 feet 8 inches and 145 pounds. I continued with my weight gain program, the running, the lifting, and the skill development. In my track workouts, I made it a goal never to loaf, not even for one sprint, and I never missed a practice, even when I was sick. Then suddenly, the sacrifice really started paying off. I got real big, real fast. In fact, I grew so fast that I have stretch marks across my chest, as if I was mauled by a bear. As I approached my senior year at Provo High, I had reached my goal of becoming 6 feet tall and fell only 5 pounds short of my goal of 180 pounds. I became a starting wide receiver on the varsity football team and was also elected as a team captain. My senior year in track was even more rewarding. Again, I was selected as team captain, became the fastest sprinter on the team, and one of the fastest sprinters in the state. At the end of the year, weighing 180 pounds and bench pressing 255 pounds, I was awarded Best Body by the senior girls of the high school, the award that I loved most of all. I did it. I really did it. I accomplished most of the goals I had set that night in my room years ago. Truly, as Napoleon Hill wrote, whatever the mind of a man can conceive and believe, the hand of man can achieve.
Turning weaknesses into strengths. Notice how David used the 5 keys to goal setting. He counted the cost, he put his goals in pen, he roped up with his friends Eddie and others, he set goals during a momentous moment when he was sick of being a punk, and he had the raw tenacity to just do it. Now, I'm not endorsing being body-centered, as David was for a period, and I can't promise you that you can will your way into growing taller. I'm only trying to demonstrate the power that goals can play in your life. As David told me his story, it became clear that being a 90-pound punk may have been a blessing in disguise. His apparent weakness, skinny body, actually became his strength, forced him to develop discipline and perseverance. People who lack the native physical, social, or mental skills they desire must fight just that much harder, and that uphill battle can produce qualities and strengths they couldn't develop any other way. That is how a weakness can become a strength. So, if you're not endowed with all the beauty, biceps, bucks, or brains that you covet, congratulations! You just may have the better draw. This poem by Douglas Mallock says it well. The tree that never had to fight for sun and sky and air and light, but stood out in the open plain and always got its share of rain, never became a forest king, but lived and died a scrubby thing. Good timber does not grow with ease. The stronger wind, the stronger trees. Make your life extraordinary. Life is short. This point is emphasized in Tom Schulman's screenplay for the classic movie Dead Poets Society. On the first day of class at Welton Academy, a boarding school steeped in tradition, Mr. Keating, the new English professor, takes his class of 25 boys out into the hall to look at old black and white photos of the young man who attended Welton more than half a century earlier. "We are food for worms, lads," he tells his class as they look at the old photos. "Believe it or not, each and every one of us in this room is one day going to stop breathing, turn cold, and die. I would like you to peruse some of the faces from the past. You've walked by them many times, but I don't think you've really looked at them before. They're not that different from you, are they? Same haircuts, full of hormones just like you. Invincible, just like you, Phil. The world is their oyster. They believe they are destined for great things, just like many of you. Their eyes are full of hope, just like you. Did they wait until it was too late to make from their lives even one iota of what they were capable? Because you see, gentlemen, these boys are now fertilizing daffodils. If you listen real close, you can hear them whisper their legacy to you. Go on, lean in, listen. Do you hear it? As the boys curiously lean in toward the glass enclosure, Professor Keating whispers in their ears, "Carpe, carpe, carpe diem. Seize the day, boys. Make your lives extraordinary." Since your destiny is yet to be determined, why not make it extraordinary and leave a lasting legacy? As you do this, remember, life is a mission, not a career. A career is a profession. A mission is a cause. A career asks, what's in it for me? A mission asks, how can I make a difference? Martin Luther King's mission was to ensure civil rights for all people. Gandhi's mission was to liberate 300 million Indians. Mother Teresa's mission was to clothe the naked and feed the hungry. These are extreme examples. You don't have to change the world to have a mission. As educator Maren Mortensen says, most of us will never do great things, but we can do small things in a great way. Coming attractions. You've heard of willpower, but have you ever heard of won't power? That's up next.
Baby steps. 1. Determine the 3 most important skills you'll need to succeed in your career. Do you need to be more organized, be more confident speaking in front of other people, have stronger writing skills?
2. Review your mission statement daily for 30 days. That's how long it takes to develop a habit. Let it guide you in all your decisions.
Number 3. Look in the mirror and ask, would I want to marry someone like me? If not, work to develop the qualities you're lacking.
Number 4. Go to your school guidance or employment counselor and talk about career opportunities. Take an aptitude test that will help you evaluate your talents, abilities, and interests.
Number 5. What is the key crossroad you are facing in your life right now? In the long run, what is the best path to take?
Number 6. Make a copy of The Great Discovery, then take a friend or family member through it step by step.
Number 7. Think about your goals. Have you put them in pen and written them down? If not, take time to do it. Remember, a goal not written is only a wish.
Number 8. Identify a negative label others may have given you. Think up a few things that you can do to change that label.
Habit 3. Put first things first. Will and won't power. I was listening to a speech on tape when the speaker began comparing the challenges faced by today's teens to those of teens who lived 150 years ago. I listened with interest. I agreed with most of what he said until this. The challenge that teens faced 150 years ago was hard work. The challenge that teens face today is a lack of hard work.